Okay, we are discussing our second unit, which is Moshe's apprehensions at the snap, which is Shmos Perek Beis of Gimel and Dalet. Okay. Moshe's first question is, why me? Who am I? We find out later that he's a very humble man. Fine. Surely it's better to send someone that they know, someone that they're used to send someone that doesn't know them, spend exactly one day in their midst, right? Okay, so remember that, this is how we ended the very end of last class, that Moshe was involved with three different altercations, right? One involving a Mitzri and an Ivri, one involving two Ivri, right? Got it? And one involving non-Ivri, you get it? If I would call a non-Ivri an X and an Ivri a Y, so it gives you every possible every possible combination of, let's say, called Jew and non-Jew, if you will. Okay? Okay, now remember, I think I told you before the concept of foreshadowing that came up in one of our early classes, remember? Okay, sometimes the Torah will tell you what appears to be minor information. It just seems to be, oh, that's the way it was. Okay? What's the significance of the fact that the two twins of Rivka were moving around inside? None of us in this room will ever experience this, but a woman who has just one baby will experience what it's like for the baby to move around. She didn't know at the time that they were two, but when you have twins, She's gonna have that experience all the time. What is the significance that the Torah should even record such a thing? Listen carefully, because you're going to hear two different approaches to Parshanut. Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, says, "Hayu misnanim b'sof me'ehav kederech uvrim." He loves that word kederech. He uses it all the time. Derech Eretz, kederech means that's just the way things are. You don't have to darshan anything out of it. Why does the Torah tell it to us? To explain why she went for an oracle to God. To ask, why is this happening to me? And God told her, let me tell you what got those two babies. Right? To Rashi, there's got to be more significance to this, right? But can you detect the foreshadowing of why the Torah wants to tell us that these two boys were struggling inside her? Foreshadowing not only for the lives of these two boys, but for Jewish history, maybe. Can't help it. That's not Torah of Parshas Toldos and say from Allah. Right? In other words, if you wanted to second guess Rivka for arranging for Yaakov to get the bracha she felt that Yaakov deserved, and say, you know, but Rivka had not stepped in, maybe these two boys would have gotten along with me. Maybe the whole history of the Jewish people could have been different. She's going to say, if maybe Yitzchak feels that way, I know better, because they were inside me. Right? I'm just saying, this opens up a whole vista of discussion about the nature of these two brothers, fetuses, brothers, and nations. Right? That's called foreshadowing. Okay? Born, but not just the way they're born, the way that the Torah cares to tell me this information. Right? He's holding on to his heel as if to say, get back here! I want to get out first. The irony, of course, is that neither brother knows that their mother was told that the one who comes out second shall prevail. Rabbi Avot Sahir. It may be that Yitzchak and Rivka disagreed as to what those three words meant, as Askenu says, but okay, I'll leave that for another time. What's the foreshadowing in our story? I'll give you an example. I want you to be aware of this book. Remember, I'm constantly in this course revealing to you certain concepts. I told you about Yitzhak Heinemann's five midrashic categories. The book I'm telling you now is called The Art of Biblical Narrative. It's written by Robert Alter, who's still in the biblical field these days. He just came out with a three-volume translation of full Tanakh. I gave a shiur on Shavuos as a critique of this. If this comes up later in the semester, we'll talk a little about his full translation. He tries to translate the Tanakh into English in a way that really should never have been done, because it can't be done. He tries to get away with things that should not be done, because you're supposed to feel I'm missing something in translation. Okay? If you create Adam, Min Ha'adama, translate that.
Okay.
So he says that create a human from the humus. Okay. Humus is like soil. Let's create a human from the humus. Alright, you see what it does? Okay. How about this one? Ekrom shall be Ekrom Teoker. Ekron Teoker. Now, you see, there are thousands of these in Tanakh. Yeshayahu says, "I was God was hoping for Mishpat, and what did he get instead? Mispach. He was hoping for Tzedakah, and instead he got Tzedakah." Please, you're not going to do this. You see, he's critical of all the other English translations before him for not being able to translate human from humans. You're supposed to feel the pang of the loss of the nuances of the Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, but in translation. I'm not saying that all translations are therefore wrong and illegal or wrong-headed, but right, you get it? You get my point, right? Okay. So that's rough. I think he's making his first book, one of his very early books, so it was 40 years old. It's called The Art of Biblical Narrative. In his introduction, he talks about foreshadowing in biblical narrative. And the example he chooses, now this is what I want to do with you right now. I'm going to tell you the example, and I want you to apply it to the three stories of Moshe here. Our objective, right? Here it is. He says that he speaks about the trend of how people meet in the Torah where they ultimately marry the person they met. Right? Now, it's simple Bacchus. Only three people in the Torah are we told about how they got married. We're not told about how Avraham and Sarah got married. We're introduced to them married. Get it? We're not told how Noah met his wife. It just says Noah, he's shown. You know what I'm saying? So who are the three people in the Torah where we're told about the arrangement of their marriage and how they met? They are Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Rachel, and Moshe and Zipporah here. Right? Okay. And Robert Alter says, now, if there were 12 such meetings in the Torah, and three of them met at such a circumstance, and four here, and five. I don't have a trend. But when all three of them meet at a level, right? It's always complex. Now that you see that there's two stages to this type of parshanut. One, to find the trend. And then two, what do you do with it? Okay, nice, beautiful. Eliezer and Rivka, well, I call him Eliezer, even though he's not named. All right. Yitzchak and Yaakov and Rachel of the well, and Yitzipar and Moshe. Okay. You have any thoughts of this? Is it about water?
Kashmir.
Yamsov is also important. You should do it with water. You want to want to give a modern fling to it, water is composed of two very highly volatile gases, hydrogen and oxygen, 7 picobalchestrons. But you put them together in some kind of configuration, Israel is learning how to do this, to create, will create water. It's the only country in the world that's creating water now, with hydrogen and oxygen. Right? Put them together, look at this, you could be very different. Don't have to be so similar in order to work things out and get and build a life together. It could be quite different. But still, you know, our country now is suffering from this kind of thing. You're a little different, your politics is slightly different, you're racist or something like that. But you're a fool or you're, okay. Here, we're just trying to say, they all needed water to teach this lesson of water. The lesson can change with every new nuance of what you know, right? They happen to be the air. There are three types of water in the Torah. There's the air, which is natural under the water, but a person has to strike it. There's a bore, which is totally made by a person, right? Pitch or bricks or something, and the third one is totally by God, totally by nature, the Ma'ayan. No person makes a Ma'ayan. It's Ma'ayan, the air, bore. Okay? Bore, man, totally man made. Ma'ayan, totally God made. The air, man and God. Nice message about marriage, right? You should believe that marriage is, that there's something divine about it. But to rely on that totally? No. There's no such thing. We don't need it in Ma'ayan. We need it in the air. We need input from people. We need shtablers. We need, okay? You want seven others? Drushas have given over the years? Okay? Anyway, you get it. There's something here. Okay? Here's the foreshadowing. The role played by the woman in each of these three stories will be indicative of her role in the future in Jewish history. Between Rivka, Rachel, and Tzipora, which of these three women plays the greatest role at her well? In a particular story. Rivka. Unequivocally. She's active, she's running, she's rushing, she's my hair, it's a rush, she's dipping the water back and forth. You know, it's not a simple thing to give water to camels, right? Yeah. All right, do you agree? Who's second? Come on, there's a clear contrast between the other two. Yeah, one tells him about her family. One, she's related to the guy. She tells her family, she tells him, I'm going to go find space for you. The other one, the third one, yeah, she leaves him there. She leaves him there. And it's not the fact that they got back quickly, which Rashi makes a whole big deal about. And her father said, how did you get him so fast today? This usually takes a lot longer than this. But they said, oh, yeah, this Egyptian guy saying, help us. He says, come on, let him eat some bread. But Rashi says that's a euphemism. Right? The euphemism is, right? Euphemism is when you say one thing but you mean another thing. Kurenolo, biochalacha. Bring that guy in. Go back and see him. Maybe he's still there. Let him come in and eat some bread. Ibn Ezra says it's simple pshat. He wanted to be hospitable. Let him in and eat something. He's tired, hungry, right? Rashi says, Kurenolo, biochalacha. I think what's guiding Rashi is he should have just said call him in and bring him home. Yochal lechem, you just feel it. Rashi has such a sense for it. He helped you? Well, girls, there's not enough guys here. You go to parties, there are 40 women and 3 men. Go, bring them home, maybe he'll marry one of you. Okay? Can you feel it? Why did he have to say, call him and let him eat bread? Don't you actually proof text in Gracious where bread means marriage?
when Potiphar's wife makes a pitch on him, we know the story, right?
Story.
Yosef is working for Potiphar.
Potiphar's wife makes
a play on Yosef, right?
Yeah.
She wants to see.
His response to her is, I cannot harm your father. Implying that he wants her.
But I can't do this terrible thing.
Narcissus wants it very bad.
Right? Look what he said. Your husband put me in charge of everything in his house, but
except
the bread that he eats. So, she says that's a euphemism for you. Okay? Got it? Now you see what a euphemism is? Okay.
This is, I think there's another euphemism in the Torah for that is washing feet. Not always.
Washing feet may just sometimes just be washing feet if the person's feet are hot and glistening, like with Avraham in Parshas Vayera. When Lot says, Lot says wash your feet first, second. When Lot says that it's at night, I don't know if it means Lot was offering these two men a woman, which was very common in the ancient world. It's strangers who come to your house, you offer them some food, some rest. And you have some women that you set aside for guests, such that. So it sounds terrible in the world today, of course, and it's always been terrible. But that was a common practice, I'm just saying. Okay? So, when David tells Uriah, you're in battle, I want you to give me a report of the battle, fine. Go home and wash your feet. What's the motive to say that that's a euphemism?
Why
mention go home and wash your feet?
Go home and, you know.
Because David wants him to sleep with his wife, of course. Why? So when he finds out that he's been away at battle for 2 years and his wife gives birth in the middle of that, right? She's already pregnant, remember? Okay. I'm going to just say, that's just Rashi. That's Rashi. Rashi on the puzzle. Okay. We have the motive. We know he wants him to sleep with his wife. Right? But why does he say, go home and wash your feet? Okay. And by the way, when Abigail, we've heard of her, right? Chapter 25 of Shmuel Aleph, comes back to David to try to convince David not to kill her husband because he was acted insolently, right? She says, oh, but that I could be your handmaiden to wash your feet. All right, it probably means I'd like to marry you. Let's put it that way. Okay. It stays in the subservient. She knows that she can be the TV, that I think she'll be the queen. Right? Okay, so Lemaisa, we just talked about euphemisms, right? We talked about foreshadowing. Because there's no doubt. I think there's any doubt here that Rivka plays perhaps the most outsized role of any woman in the Tanakh. Really. What woman plays the role that Rivka does in Jewish history? You get it? By putting Yaakov ahead of Esav. You know what I'm talking about? Right? There's the conflict inside the woman. Right? Now, between Rachel and Tzipora, okay, what role does Rachel play in Jewish history? She died so young. I have to imagine that if Rachel had not died so young, she would have prevented Yosef from behaving in the way that God him sold. It's all part of Hashem's plan. She would have stepped in and said, Yosef, stop with the dreams, stop with the coat in front of him. Don't bring me evil reports. What are you doing? Right? But she's not there. You see, that's also a trend. Remember, when you're learning biblical texts, you have to see trends. Right? There's no Rachel, but Rivka does solve the problem for her son. She sends him away because Esav wants to kill him. And think of Sarah too. Sarah also makes sure that her husband chooses the son of his that she wants. Right? And God agrees. So women, so far in Bereishis, have all told their husbands which child, or in this case, doesn't even tell them, but makes him, right?
trend continues in Shmos, where it's all women who are helping this boy survive, right? There's a Shifra, there's a Pua, there's a mother, there's a sister, there's a Baspara. Where are the men? Yeah? Okay, Rachel does play some role in Jewish history. Do you remember where? What sefer? She's actually mentioned by a Navi later. It's a famous song, you know?
It's in the Torah, the second day of Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
And Rachel is crying for us because...
There's a Navi later in Tanakh that actually brings up Rachel as one of the saving graces. Rashi says a beautiful medrash there. Amazing medrash. Rashi says that Rachel actually saved Bnei Yisrael that we would return. I have to share with you such a beautiful drash. Is that when God, when the excesses of Menashe tore apart the religious fabric of Israel, and returned Israel and came out into a polytheistic state. So God said, I've had all these people, I have to choose another nation. So the Midrash says that one by one, various biblical characters all paraded before God to explain why God should forgive his people. And one by one, God rejects all their arguments. I was ready to give up my son to you. And everyone, God pushes aside and says, not enough. But Moshe, everybody. Sarah says, Rivka said, Rachel comes before and says, listen, God, before I make my argument, tell me again why you want to destroy the Israel now. God, you know, each one of these Midrashim is a pasuk that proves that, you know, proves the point. And God says, you know, my people have been committing adultery on me all these years. I'm a long-suffering husband, and she's been playing the harlot with me all these years. She goes with all the lovers, she goes... So it's one thing that my people go to other places to worship a Avodah Zarah. But Menashe went one step further than everybody. He brought Avodah Zarah into my Kodesh Kodashim. He brought idols into my temple. Like Yirmiyahu says in chapter 19, it's bad enough that they sacrifice their children to Molech. What's worse than that? What could possibly be worse than sacrificing your children to Molech? Come on, show me what you're thinking. What's worse? Sacrificing your children to Hashem. You see the difference here? Right? You think that that's what I want? So, by bringing idols into the Kodesh Kodashim, that's worse than anything. Right? So Rachel says to God, God, whose mercies are greater, yours or man's? So God says, I'm more merciful than the most merciful person who has ever lived. She says, okay, now you have to forgive them. I'll tell you why. Because I took someone else into my home. My husband worked for me. Right? When it came time, my father switched me for my sister. All I had to do was show up and say, hey, wait a second. He probably had her tied up someplace. I don't know. But not only that, I had a deal with my husband, with my future husband, that, you know, I thought my father would look something like this. So I said, right? Do this under the chuppah, and you'll know that it's me. So she didn't want Leah to be embarrassed, so she gave her those signs. That's why Yaakov was oblivious. You know, she gave her the sign, even if she said, yeah, she gave me the signs. Right? So, do you see it? I did take, she calls it a tzar. I took someone else into my home. I let another person into my bedroom with my husband to take my place. So you should be ready to do the same. I'm not condoning the behavior. You should forgive. And Hashem said, it gives the answer that's written in Yom Yom, Perek Lamed Aleph. He says, Yesh tikvah l'seich, right? V'shav aban l'vulam. They will return because of you, Rachel. You do this one thing, that I'm taking it back. Okay. Okay. So now, work with me here. What can we do with Moshe's three stories? What are these three stories foreshadowing? Have Moshe successfully saving the Hebrew from the Mitzri? Moshe getting these two people to stop fighting? And Moshe saving these people, the seven daughters of Israel, from the Eurogian? You see that Moshe stands up for what's right. Not only has a sense for what's right, he stands up for the weaker one, he stands up for the being beaten. He also gets involved when they're on the same level here. Right? He gets involved when they're not familiar to him. Here, both of them. Why have to get involved in this? Right? He knows what's right when it's involved. But this foreshadowing here, right? Here, what is the basic underlying theme in all this, right? Protecting his people, right? He just found out that they're his people. Right? His internal squabbles of his people, right? You see it? And here, dealing, let's say, klapei chutz. Would you look at the board and see that two of these three, Moshe was unparalleled. Moshe was a vast success in every single element of one and three. But some are suffering somewhat from two, would you say? Okay. Remember we did with theme building, Mikusa Ali Love, and Yitzhak Heinemann of those Rashis? We wrote them on the board, remember? He's not afraid. I'm not afraid of Paro. Go back to Paro. Whoever wants to kill you is dead. I don't care about that. I'm worried about my people. Right? He looked this way and that way. Who's looking? Anybody looking? Implying that if there was an Egyptian looking, he would, finish my sentence, not have saved this poor Hebrew at the top line. Right? No. He's going to act heroically no matter what. It's just a question of am I killing off something in the future that would be significant for my people? His concern is not about Egyptians. Moshe was afraid and said, now the thing is known. What is he afraid of? The Egyptians know. Now the thing is known. What's known? That I killed an Egyptian. No, says the Medrash and Rashi. No. What's the thing that's known to Moshe? Remember? We did this list. Let's look at that aside. We're talking about Moshe's apprehensions. I don't know, how far we're going to get with that today, but let's take a look at these two Rashis. It's a very important parshanut point I would like to make with you. It's Perek Bet. They're both in Pasuk. Okay. Remember the Milat Mancha with Ish, right? V'yomer mi samcha l'ish sar v'shofet aleinu. Who made you an Ish sar v'shofet? Remember the ponderance of the word Ish? Do you remember all that, guys? Who made you an Ish sar v'shofet halar geini ata omer? Remember we talked about the ambiguity of Makeh, as opposed to Harag. Nice, remember? You all have that? Kasher harakta es hamitzri. You see harag. pasuk didn't say haragis hamitzri. The pasuk says vayachas hamitzri. Remember, we talked about the moral question of did Moshe do the right thing or not in the way he killed the Egyptian. Vayira Moshe. What is Moshe afraid of? Look at Rashi, please. Find the Rashi, please. You see it? Perek Bet Pasuk Yud Dalet. Bet Yud Dalet. You have it? Look at the Rashi. Vayira Moshe. It's not the first Rashi in the Pasuk. You have to go down a little bit. Okay, have we got it? Kipshuto. What do you think Rashi means by that? Kipshuto. Of Egyptians. Yeah, kipshuto doesn't mean what do the words mean. He was afraid it can mean a lot of things. He was afraid he wouldn't have enough food for lunch that day. I don't know. You can be afraid of many things. But it's pretty much whatever he's afraid of. Now let me tell you what the drash is. Are you having trouble finding the pasuk? Bet Yud Dalet.
And then you die.
So, umidrasho. So kipshuto means whatever you know what pshat means, which is the simplest outer layer meaning. Lafshit means to skin an animal, right? So whatever you know, a clear-minded person thinks pshat is, you'll know what he's afraid of, right? What is that? Egyptians know that I killed. I have something to fear right now. Right? Umidrasho, however, I quote to you a medrash. Da'ag lo al shira'a b'Yisrael risha'im dilatorin. What's he afraid of?
Israel.
Israel, dilatorin are talebearers. Look what goes on with him. Look at that, talk to me. Can he get me in trouble? Amar me'ata shema einam re'uyin lehigael. No, I'm not worried about getting in trouble. This is before God appeared to him, ostensibly, right? He's heroic. I don't care about these Egyptians, right? But maybe, just maybe, maybe my people don't deserve to be redeemed. Moshe. Does he know about the promise to Avraham? Does he know about that these people? He may have heard words on the street that these people believe that they're supposed, that they'll get up and leave this place at a certain point. There's no doubt. Look at the end of Bereishis, the way Yosef talks, the way Yaakov talks, right? Take my bones out of this place when you leave. They know they're not staying there forever. I don't think there was ever a movement, if you'll forgive me for the comparison, of Nebuch, the African slaves taken to America, having a mass movement saying, we will all return to Liberia or something. That wasn't what Liberia's origins actually. You ever hear of such a place in Africa? Named after the word liberation. Right? I don't. That was an attempt by the whites in America to just, send them back to Africa. I don't think that was because of a movement saying we're going to return to our homeland. But the Israelites in Egypt certainly had such a tradition, right? Was Moshe aware of such a tradition? Rashi has him here saying he is, right? He seems to be aware of such a tradition. What makes you think that they're supposed to be redeemed? They'll live out their lives here in Egypt. Maybe an altruistic king will free them. Right? You hear what I'm saying? But Moshe seems to know about such a thing. Okay? So does everybody see what he's afraid of? Now, does the pshat and the drash both capture the meaning of the word he was afraid?
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two? What was he afraid of? You got me? Okay. Now, you see the first word in this parish is kipshuto? Look at the first word in the next Rashi. Ochein noda hadavar. Now the thing is known. Okay, without looking at Rashi, because he says yes, it's kipshuto. What is the kipshuto here? What is the thing that's known? Come on, guys, think. What is the thing that's known?
I
killed an Egyptian. Right? And there's something to be afraid of. Okay? Alright, kipshuto. Rashi wants to tell you, I know how to be shot. Moshe is genuinely afraid of the repercussions of what I just did yesterday. Caused by these guys, the way they're talking. God, shh, keep a secret, guys. I looked this way and that way and I saw no man. I knew you were there. I saw Hebrews around. I didn't think I had to worry about that. This is all pshat, right? Look at the next word in Rashi. See, Rashi doesn't say kipshuto here. He uses a different word, which is kimashma'o. I'll confess there are some commentaries to Rashi that say there's no difference between kimashma'o and kipshuto. I beg to differ. Rashi is too precise, a reader of text, to tell me that kipshuto means the same as kimashma'o. Anybody here want to suggest the difference between pshat and mashma'ut? Why would I say that Rashi doesn't think the two are the same? Because many times in his commentary, he says the following two words. Pshuto kimashma'o. If those two words were repetitive, or... You with me? Are you following me? If those two words were repetitive, or one could be replaced for the other, right? I could substitute kipshuto kimashmao. Doesn't, why would he ever say kipshuto kimashmao? And what does it mean, kipshuto kimashmao? So, especially, this is a good point for you to remember today. Because we talk about euphemisms today. What is the pshat of call him in and let him eat bread? That's the mashmaut of see, mashmaut means the verbal meaning of the words. Pshuto means, I'm not limiting this to the definition of pshat to this. Pshuto means, yeah. What do you mean by this? What's your pshat? What do you want to tell me? Yeah? Usually pshat is the outer layer meaning of what you're saying, but something especially in humor. Right, for a joke to be funny, you have to have a different, you know. My father was in the hospital and the nurse asked him, Mr. Schwartz, are you comfortable? He goes, yeah, I make a living. Right? So, you get the point. What made that, like, cute is that she didn't mean that. She meant, is the pillow right? Okay, is it, you know, you do have comfortable earnings. That's not what she meant. So I'm not saying that's not all jokes, but what makes a lot of riddles and jokes cute is where you think it means this, it means that. But advertisements do that also. Right? Okay, this vodka will leave you breathless. Dead? No, I can't believe that someone would pay money for an advertising campaign for suicidal vodka drinkers. Right? What is it? What is the pshat of breathless? I can't catch my breath. This is so good. Yeah, maybe, I only learned this from taking an advertising course in this school. But this actual example came up. It was a creative writing class, and advertising was one of the weeks. He told me, I didn't know this, vodka drinker, is that vodka is a unique alcoholic beverage. Is that if it's really good, you could drink a whole bottle and no one can taste it on your breath. You drink two beers, your wife knows you've been drinking. Okay. You drink whiskey, two shots of whiskey, it's on your breath. Everyone can know you've been drinking. But good vodka will leave you breathless. You get it? That's a deeper. That's the trash of breathless. You get it? Okay. The mashma'ut is the plain verbal meaning of the word. Plain verbal meaning of the word could be a lot of different things. It could be dead. It's not breathing anymore. Right? Okay. Breathless meaning amazed is probably the pshat, but
is an unusual way of saying in the East. Right? The more clear ways to say amazing than breathless. But that's the nature of advertising. This, you know, I remember another guy, this was in the course, but I remember where there was a car company, doesn't matter, that this woman drove the clink of a car and always met guys, because her car will always get stuck. And guys would come in and see her and help her, if she'd get her number, or that she'd go on dates based on her car getting stuck on the road. But now that she drives a Honda, she's been driving 60,000 miles without a hitch. Okay, the hitch is usually a date of getting married. 60,000 miles without a hitch. Something cute to get. So this is why I think Rashi is loves humor. He's so attuned to this. Let me give you a test drive. It says, Hashem struck Paro al dvar sarai eshesamra. So if you wanted it to write a good English translation like Robert Alter would want, you would probably have to say he smote Paro on the matter of Sarah. You get it? Everyone see? On, al, dvar is a construct, the matter of. You get it? What's an easier way to say al in English? He smote Paro
because of.
In other words, You ever read about Occam's razor in philosophy? You know what that is, right? Always say things that cut away all the extra fat. It's a razor that slices everything. If you say more than you need to say, someone may darshan it. Okay? So why do you have to say Al-Dvar Sarai? There are plenty of better Hebrew biblical words like Bavur, Shvil, Don't. Well, don't use two words when you could use one. More like at the beginning of Tzachim, if you remember. Okay? So why are you using two words? You ever hear the word, what was Rashi? Remember what Rashi says on that?
Sorry, I had specifically said that.
Right. He smote Paro on the word or the instruction of Sarai. Ah, that's an amazing story. Why didn't she exercise that before she went in the room with him? But she had the power to bring upon the lightning bolts of God to smite Paro. Okay? But you see what the source of saying such a thing. That's the challenge of reading Rashi. You read it. Huh? Really, Rashi? What makes you say that? So, because, why Al-Dvar, not in a simple Hebrew word? Okay? You all got it? So when it says Vayira Moshe, and you get a pshat and a drash, the pshat and the drash both capture the essence of the word Vayira Moshe. But on the second perush, usually Rashi gives you a drash because the pshat didn't capture the mashmaut of the word. This Rashi is, I'm not saying it's unique, but it's very rare. Try to explain to me. Look at this Rashi. It's very rare. Very few like this in the Rashi's parish to the Torah. Vayira Moshe kipshuto, ocheino daha davar kimashma'o. And now again he says, umidrasho. Rashi reveals himself right away. Umidrasho, no da li hadavar shahayisi tama olav. Machatu Yisrael mikol ayinu musla olav lios nirdim. I have a theory about Rashi, although it's hard, very hard to prove this, that when Rashi writes something like this, he's actually talking about the Jews in France in his own time, because they were suffering terribly also. He might have experienced some internal squabbles and saw, you know, guys, you're behaving just like another, you know, like Dustin Vavira. Right? Be that as it may, why does Rashi change from kipshuto to kimashma'o? Kipshuto says kimashma'o. What does that mean? Now the thing is known. What's known? Why these people suffer so much. But now I see. Look how they behave.
God, I was wondering how you allow this to happen, but I see they bring it upon themselves. So finally, someone's trying to save them, and look how they behave. Right? Can you figure out, based on, I gave you a lot of background here, with humor, advertisements, al-dabar, what? Why did Rashi use kimashma'o the second time? The answer is hinted in right in the beginning of Rashi's words after the word umidrasho. Midrasho. What is the thing that's known? Rashi introduces a word into his parish that's not in the pasuk, which is li. Excellent. In the mashma'ut of ochein noda ha'davar is now the thing is known, but Rashi is doing something exactly on the head of what he usually does, which is to incorporate a drive. Sarah told God when to hit Parah. That's not possible. But why am I doing it? Because the pshat, because of, doesn't capture the essence of the mashma'ut, of the word al-dabar. Here Rashi is doing the exact opposite. He is introducing a drash that flies in the face of the mashma'ut, because now, show me that you got the last 15, 20 minutes. Because if the drash that I'm instituting right now, midrasho, is correct, the pasuk should have said, Vayira Moshe Vayomar. And that's not in the pasuk. You can't put words into the pasuk. Or maybe Ochein Yodati Hadavar. Maybe that's a biblical Hebrew way to say that without adding any word. You get it? Ochein Yodati Hadavar. Now I know. But that would be absurd. That would sound almost absurd. Achin no tali hadavar. You get it? The pasuk still says achin no da hadavar. Okay. So how is Rashi telling you with one word that I'm doing something very unusual here? Kimashma'o. Only the pshat is kimashma'o. What I'm about to write now isn't. No, isn't kimashma'o. Usually Rashi does the opposite. He institutes a drash because the pshat doesn't capture the mashmaut. Here he's doing the exact opposite. He's bringing a drash which flies in the face of the mashmaut. The word li, as you said, Moshe, is not there. How can you bring a drash that goes against the grain of the pasuk? You get it? Okay, we'll close with that. Remember the foreshadowing, guys, I think, make sure that you get clearly, is that Moshe does very well when protecting Jews throughout the whole Torah. He does very well when dealing with the Paros and the Sichons and the Ogs and the Yisros and whatever else outside the nation. But the second story, I think if Aaron was there, what would Aaron have done with these two people fighting? You hear that? Moshe just reacts quickly like he does in the first story. You get it? Shalom needs a lot of time, a lot of bad days, which is shalom. We need to bend the Aaron. Moshe would have said, over my dead body, I'm not making an angel, and they would have killed him. But Aaron says, Emes does not know how to change. You can't, 3 + 5 is not anything but one answer. Emes is only, very mathematical and very dry. Shalom is more, bends a little. Okay? So Moshe is, that's why Hashem tells Moshe, you're right, Moshe, you can't do this alone. You need your brother. The two of you will do it. Okay? Moshe himself runs into trouble. There's a Korach, there's a rebellion here, there's a rebellion there. Your sister just died, they're still yelling at you. Okay, welcome to Jewish leadership. Okay, so we're going to continue still with chapter 3 and 4, Mitzvah Hashem, on Tuesday.